It's intermission time here in Severance Hall, and now here is the intermission feature for this broadcast.
Thank you, Robert. It is our great pleasure today to talk with Victor Babin, whom we have just heard as pianist in the Beethoven Quintet for Winds and Piano. Dr. Babin has been director of the Cleveland Institute of Music since 1961, is a distinguished composer, and of course one half of the world-renowned piano duo of Vronsky and Babin. Vitya Vronsky, Mrs. Babin in private life, is artist in residence at the CIM, the Cleveland Institute of Music. Dr. Babin, you began your career as one does, as a piano soloist, when you studied with Arthur Schnabel in Berlin. And in the 1930s, you and your wife merged your careers, and you've been playing the kind of chamber music that is required by piano duos ever since. When did you begin to play chamber music with other instruments, so the kind we heard today?
The interesting thing is that the actual involvement in chamber music, in my case, started during World War Number Two. You know, Klaus, that no matter how you look at a war, it is a bad thing. But for me, it had a very significant virtuous side to it, involvement in chamber music. I was assigned to the Army Air Forces Band in Washington at Bowling Field, and the band at that time consisted of musicians drawn into the army from the major orchestras, the New York Philharmonic, the Boston Symphony, the Cleveland Orchestra, and so forth. And there was a clarinetist there from Cincinnati. And we got to be friends, and we started to play Brahms sonatas after having done our duty cleaning latrines and looking generally after military details of that sort. And this is how I really got involved in playing chamber music. Then later on, after the war, I started to go to the summer festivals, particularly Aspen, Colorado. And there I met Mr. Harrell, Mac Harrell, the famous baritone. You know Mac Harrell, and
yes,
you know all
well.
About him, of course.
I admired him immensely.
And his son has been famous in Cleveland as the principal cellist of the Cleveland Orchestra, of course. And with him, we made a great deal of vocal music. It happens that I regard songs or song cycles, to be more precise, not as a singer on a pedestal and a pianist underneath it, but as a dialogue, as a duet, and I, in some way, regard it as type of chamber music, which I, of course, have made all my life, or at least since I met my future wife.
When you played clarinet in the army, no, you didn't play clarinet, you played the clarinet quintet of sonatas of Brahms. You didn't actually play the clarinet too, did you?
I was assigned as a horn player, a French horn player, and I took lessons from the first horn of the New York Philharmonic, Arthur Berg. He was in the United States Army in World War II, and as a famous instrumentalist, he was put into the Army Air Forces Band. And I took lessons from him. I was very good at producing one or two low notes. But then my commanding officers soon saw that I am just forever committed to be a piano player. And so he had me concentrate on piano as a public relations attempt. When famous people came, then we played music for them during the war. And so I remained a pianist and chamber music player for the individual instrumentalists in the Air Forces Band.
There is a famous precedent for this learning of other instruments in the Army. Walter Piston was asked, when he joined the Army in World War I, whether he could play an instrument. And he shrugged and said the saxophone. And in 3 days, he learned the saxophone in order to be able to play it. I mean, he didn't know it at the time because the violin was not
terribly useful. To make a dreadful pun, he should have played a piston instrument, shouldn't he?
Yes, a piston
like
instrument.
A trumpet, maybe,
but what amused him no end is that he was assigned as musician second class. Now, tell me, with all these varied experiences, from low notes on the horn to the clarinet to the piano, what particular challenges face the chamber music player to which the soloist is not exposed?
Yes, that is very interesting. You know, one is used to think that if you are not a great soloist, then you do the second best, which is chamber music, or as some people call it, accompaniment. In actual fact, one is required to exercise greater control when you play with someone else. You are not only concerned with your own control of the instrument, but you also must know what the other person is doing. And so it often happens that those assignments that a pianist gets from the page of music, like forte, piano, accelerando, and so forth, while you follow them with great precision, they may not quite be the same as when you play alone, because you have to take great care that you are in contact
with the other,
or
yes,
in the context of the total music. It often happens when you have a passage which is marked forte, in order to create a harmonious totality, you actually have to play maybe mezzo piano. So in certain respects, it is a additional burden, if you might say so. It is also an additional pleasure. But the responsibilities are magnified when you play chamber music rather than lightened.
This particular work that we have just heard for piano and wind quintet exists in another version.
It does.
With strings, which you have played and recorded.
I played it with being a member of the by now defunct Festival Quartet, which consists of Simon Goldberg, violin, William Primrose, viola, Mr. Groudon, cello, and myself as piano. And in that version for three strings and piano, it is a charming piece. Actually, it's a different piece of music altogether. So my experience here to play with the gentlemen of the Cleveland Orchestra is very wonderful, because again, the coordination of the pianist with the wind instrument are quite different from those required when he plays with strings.
What is it like to work together with singers? You've mentioned Mack Harrell. Now, you've been renowned recently for your joint recitals with soprano Elena Stieber. How is it when you have a temperament that is apparently so different from your entire background and training as Miss Stieber's? When you make chamber music together, how long does it take before you are on the same track?
Speaking about temperament, I think it's wonderful that you mentioned it. I think that in order to play chamber music successfully, it must be played by friends. People must be friendly. It is not possible, I think, at least in my experience, the human quality of a personal sympathy is very important. This goes, of course, also in the case when you play with your wife. You must be on good
terms.
Yes, at least to say that. But with Miss Stieber, of course, has a different temperament. This is simply the same urge to make music, which consists of two elements. One is the pianistic, the other is the vocal. I see really no difference in approach. There is one new element of difficulty here. That is, when the singer sings out into the public, very often the pianist does not hear the voice very well. And I am not a believer that a good accompanist or a good piano player with a singer is the one who always plays softly. This is untrue.
Well, that's the name of Gerald Moore's book. It's called Am I Too Loud?
That is quite right. So that is the only difficulty. When I do not hear the singer well, I know that the singer is singing loudly, I'm sorry. And so I play out.
You are composing now, you mentioned to me earlier, again, music that is in the chamber field.
Yes, I'm composing my Concerto da Camera number 3 for piano, four hands, and percussion ensemble. And that is the last in the series of 3 Concerti da Camera, which I think you've heard the first two.
I would like to have enough time to ask you about one thing that has concerned me, namely, what satisfactions you derive from administration of music, since you have been director of the Institute for 10 years previously at Aspen and at Tanglewood. But it seems to me that perhaps you have given the answer that there is a chamber music quality to running an institution as well.
Well, that is charmingly put. I think that since music gave so much happiness to myself in my life, I am now in the position to organize and institutionalize this art in such a way as to permit this happiness to be shared with others, and particularly with young people. And maybe this is the greatest satisfaction that administration has, that you prepare a climate in which good music is being made available to those that seek it.
That's very poetically put. We've been grateful to talk with Victor Babin, director of the Cleveland Institute of Music, distinguished pianist and composer. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Klaus.
Now back to Robert Conrad.